We think of ourselves as a multicultural country, but interestingly, not necessarily as a multilingual country. And yet, around 300 languages are spoken in Australia on any given day. A new five-part series called Tongue Tied and Fluent is exploring multilingual Australia. It airs this Saturday on Earshot here on RN, and it features the voices of many Australians who speak more than one language. Here's a little taste of what some of the languages are that you'll hear in the series.
Hello. What language are you speaking?
Chinese.
What kind of Chinese?
Well, Cantonese.
Do you speak other languages as well?
Yeah, Vietnamese.
Oh, nothing yet, huh?
No.
Oh, okay. And Cantonese? Where did you grow up?
Grow up in Cambodia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So can you speak Khmer as well?
I can understand it, yeah.
But then you can speak so many different Chinese languages as well?
Yeah. Like Jeju, Hainan, Mandarin, Cantonese.
Cantonese, yeah.
Yeah.
And a little bit of Khmer and English. So that's six
Khmer
languages.
English, yeah.
What language do you speak at home then?
At home, yeah, my husband, the Jew.
So one side is the Jew and the other side is another language?
Language
is
Hainan.
Okay. Yeah, you don't meet many people who speak Hainan here, I think.
No, not much.
Because the only thing I know about Hainan is the chicken, like chicken Hainan.
Oh, chicken Hainan, right. Yeah.
It's amazing how food often is the way to communicate between people of two different language backgrounds. That's an excerpt from Tongue Tied and Fluent. And with us today is one of the two producers of this amazing Earshot series, Sheila Pham. And Sheila, where did you meet these women?
Hi, Michael. Yes, we met these women in Cabramatta, which is where we started out with making this series. But Masako Fukui and I, he's the other co-producer, we ended up going all over the place and meeting parents and children, academics, educators, people, you know, who live their lives in more than one language.
I've got to say, too, that hearing that conversation there as an excerpt from the series, did that woman say she had six languages under her belt?
Yeah, I mean, and it's something that you realize when you meet a lot of first-generation migrants, some of them come here with like lots and lots of languages because they would have lived in other countries as well. So yeah, that woman had grown up in Cambodia from a Chinese-speaking background. And when we say Chinese, I mean, that's like lots of different languages there.
Sure.
So it was amazing. This is just some random person we accosted on the street. and of course, we did talk about a little bit about food as well at the end.
Oh, you have to. It's part of the whole way we communicate. So what are some of the challenges, Sheila, of speaking other languages other than English in this country?
Yeah, well, Australia has a very English-dominant culture, as we all know, and we have something, I guess, which we could call that the monolingual mindset as well. So, and that's at the heart of why we often kind of hear these stories reported about, you know, racist rants on public transport where people get annoyed that someone's for speaking another language, or even like when, you know, people are applying for jobs and they have names which aren't English and then that somehow, you know, they experience discrimination because of that. And I think it has something to do with the fact that, you know, in terms of our national identity, it's still like, you know, in so many ways, we've still got so many unresolved issues about what it means to be Australian. And English has sort of become one way that people have kind of hung on to as something that tries to define us as a country.
It's almost like monolingual is oppression. It's almost a symbol of oppression of other people's cultural backgrounds. I'm just wondering, in the people you spoke to, both professionals and people in the street, were they finding it hard to cope in the face of what you call this monolingual mindset?
I think people find ways to cope with it. But what happens, I guess, is, you know, so the need to speak English is really important here. Like if you want to get ahead in life, if you want to just survive on a day-to-day basis in Australia, it just means that we miss out on so many other kind of things that people, you know, bring with them to Australia as well. And also, it's not just about that, but it's just about, well, languages are valuable in themselves as well as like, you know, ways into thinking about, you know, other cultures and just other kind of mindsets as well. And so I think people just find ways to just, you know, live their life in a kind of, and in private, they will speak other languages and that's a really important part of their life. But then in public, I guess you sort of have to end up suppressing that a little bit sometimes, the fact that you speak another language. And I think that's real shame. And that's something that we don't talk enough about in Australia. Mm. Like we're starting to embrace multiculturalism, I think, a lot more than we might have before as well. But multilingualism is still something we don't talk about enough.
No, I think you're right there. And so where are some of the community sites where people who have more than one language can gather to practice that language?
Yeah, I mean, it's in plain sight, really. Like, so even on the, you know, in the streets of suburbs like Cabramatta, which is a particularly multilingual place. But I mean, you find it all over the place, because even in the making of the series, I didn't really even think about just how much time and passion that people invest in things like community language schools. So on the weekends, lots of people, you know, will send their kids to these Saturday schools or Sunday schools, and they're usually run by like parents and volunteers and, you know, other educators as well. Lots of like places of worship, you know, around the country. I mean, there's just so many sites where communities gather and they speak in other languages as well. I mean, in English is these days, I guess, part of the mix as well. So when we say multilingual, we mean all languages as well.
Sure, sure. So when it comes to the role, if you like, that our education system plays in maybe not encouraging a multilingual approach to communication, do you explore that in the series?
Yeah, we go into a lot of detail about education in episode 3. Episode 2 focuses more on families, you know, doing it, raising it at home. But episode 3 looks at what the education system's role is. And unfortunately, it's pretty appalling in Australia. Like, as far as OECD countries go, we're pretty much, I think, at the bottom of in terms of language education outcomes. And that's because languages are not really part of the core curriculum. So that's why, in a way, we have to have these Saturday schools and Sunday schools to make up for that deficiency. It's very rare these days to meet people who will graduate high school having learnt a language through their education. It's probably a bit more common to meet kids who enter into school as multilinguals or bilinguals and then sort of basically graduate becoming monolinguals, which is a bit of a sad state of affairs because they've lost something they actually had in the beginning.
Well, you spend a lot of time in gathering information and anecdotes as well as observations from professional perspectives across this series. Sheila, you spend a lot of time with parents in this. Let's play another excerpt from one of the mums who features in episode 2.
It is one of the hardest things I've ever done. It is a full-time job. Like children as well, they want to speak in the language they're in, the language they learn at school in. Coming back home and talking to me in Estonian is artificial, almost like stop their brain. What am I trying to say? Where are the words? I need to find them in my brain. I'm quite strict. I don't give them a choice. Sometimes I just pat them on the back. We've had little cries. I'm like, I know it's hard. I know, but we're still doing it. I'm the only source of vocabulary they have. So my technique is if the baby goes, house, or is searching for words, I would be like, yes, baby, that's a house. Look at the two-story house with a red roof and a beautiful chimney. Can you see the yellow flowers growing in front of the house? So I have to artificially do a lot of work every day, every second. I had a friend, still have, who's a linguist, and we've talked about every theory, we've read the research, and the best way is just one parent, one language.
That's Trin, who is a parent and has an Estonian background, and she's part of the series called Tongue Tied and Fluent, which is premiering on Earshot on RN this coming weekend. With me is one of the producers of that series, Sheila Pham. Trin sounds like she's having a hard time there convincing her children that learning Estonian is a good thing to do.
Oh, but she's amazing what she's achieved. Like, I'm in awe of how she's managed to pass on Estonian, which is actually a really hard language as well, and it's quite a small community in Australia. But it is, she said it's a full-time job. Like, and for her, she's really committed a lot of her time and energy to doing this, and especially because she's the main speaker, since her husband isn't so fluent in Estonian, and he learnt it as an adult, and he comes from an English-speaking background. So one thing we do look at is essentially that mums do the bulk of the multilingual child rearing. And actually, even when the mum is also the one from the English-speaking background. But of course, you
know. Is that right? That's really interesting. So even if they're not the purveyor and owner of the mother tongue, they still end up being the main conveyor.
Yes, and so someone we feature actually in episode 2 is a linguist, Hannah Torsch, and her research focused on this, and she wrote a book about it recently. And yeah, no, it's even if they're not the main speaker of the language, sometimes it's the mum who really, you know, does the work of enrolling the kids in the community language schools or making sure they have, keep in touch with the grandparents. And so, I mean, it's not so surprising, I guess, because like, you know, most domestic work, it's often the bulk of it is done by mums. Mm. But of course, there are exceptions, and we did meet dads. It was a little bit harder to find, but in the end, we featured Dylan, who's Welsh, and you hear his son reading a book in Welsh, which is quite impressive, since Welsh is quite a hard language as well.
And Sheila, I love the way you called his name, not Dylan, but Dylan, which sounds very Welsh indeed.
Yeah, well, I guess, and for us too, like, so Masako and I, you know, we also grew up bilingual. Like, Masako's from a Japanese background, I'm from a Vietnamese background. And it was such an enriching experience for us too. Like, we met all kinds of people speaking all kinds of languages as well. So beyond our own experiences, just to see how other cultures maintain. And I mean, one thing I realized too is that I come from quite a major language group, really, whereas something like Welsh, it's a very small language group, and they've got a very long history of battling against English colonization themselves.
Sometimes you're the only Welsh in the village. That's what can happen. Look, Sheila, it's a fantastic idea, and I'm really glad you've pinpointed this as an area of focus for Earshot. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Tongue Tied and Fluent. It's a series, a five-part series. It starts airing on Saturday on Earshot here on RN. But the first episode is available right now online. You can go to the Earshot website. We have links to there on the Life Matters website. You can also hear it on the ABC Listen app.